Eagles Entertainment.
With the 13th pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select...
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by LifeBrand. I'm your host, Fran Duffy. Week 11 of college football is in the books. It was an outstanding weekend once again here at the college ranks, and we've got a lot to cover. We also have some all-star game announcements. We're going to do it all in Saturday Scouting. Dane Brugler is here. We're going to recap what we saw in Week 11. We're going to talk through Senior Bowl, talk through Shrine Bowl, all the names that have come out in the last few days. We're going to go through it all right at the top of the show. After that, we've got On the Clock, where Gabriella DiGiovanni, she comes back for our weekly segment, where we're going to debate who's going to be an impact player off the bench as a defensive lineman? Who could be that sixth man for a team's defense? We'll get into that in that segment with Ella. After that, we've got Under the Hood, where Brentley Weissman from the Draft Network is going to come on the show and talk through edge rushers. A very D-line-centric episode here in this week of the Journey to the Draft podcast. We're going to talk through what Brentley looks for with edge rushers coming from college to the NFL, and we'll keep that going with Scouting Report as Ben Fennell returns to talk through Josh Sweat coming out of Florida State just a few years ago and what he has done so far in the NFL. As well, are there some players that kind of match Josh Sweat's profile when he was leaving Florida State? As always, make sure you head on over to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. Leave us a rating. Leave us a comment. If you've got a question, we will answer it here on an upcoming episode. Leave us your mock drafts. If you want an idea that you want, you've got players that you want the Eagles to draft, go fill out a mock draft. Leave it there in the comment section. We'll break it down here on an upcoming episode. That said, excited to kick things off here with Dane Brugler. It's time for Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
All right, again here to start things off with Saturday Scouting is my friend Dane Brugler from The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at DP Brugler. And Dane, before we get into this weekend's action here in college football, we'll go through some of the names, some of the all-star game announcements. We hit on the first round of them with Ben last week here on the show. But let's go now with some of the later ones over the course of the weekend. And we'll start with the Shrine Bowl. Four players named in the last couple of days. And we'll start with Purdue tight end Payne Durham. Big-bodied kid I know has been pretty productive this year.
Yeah, and he's coming off a really productive game over the weekend against Illinois, who's got a really, really good secondary. And I thought he handled himself really well. Big physical presence, 6'5 and a half, 260 pounds, uses that size to his advantage. And you could just, after the catch, he just rumbles. He's a hard guy to bring down. As a blocker, he's a battering ram, so he can jolt defensive ends in the run game. As a pass catcher, he's got those large accepting hands, just swallows the football, puts it away. Not a guy that's going to be a big time yak threat, but he's just missing that explosive gear that you want to see before the route or before the catch as a route runner and then after the catch. But he can be a physical get in the way blocker and a reliable pass catcher. So, he's going to be a day three tight end and a player that can stick in the league if he just shows his consistency both as a blocker and catcher.
And then Ladarius Henderson, the guard from Arizona State, seems like the Shrine Bowl has some inroads out there with the Sun Devils. They had a bunch of those guys last year. They got a couple more here so far in this cycle. Henderson's interesting, man, because he came in and started as a 17-year-old true freshman at left tackle, has since moved to left guard, and his play has gotten better each and every year on campus.
That's it. I mean, you hit on the age thing, and he's got rare length, especially for a guard, over 35-inch arms. Doesn't turn 21 until December. So this is a young player who you feel is on an upward trajectory. You see the movement skills. He does a really nice job climbing to the second level. He can pick off linebackers, does a nice job sealing run lanes, backside pulls. There are times where he'll get a little bit overzealous and, lunge and lower his eyes and get off balance. Just needs to be a little more consistent with those breakdown skills and then just engaging with his hands, being more consistent. Missed some time this year with an injury. So, looking forward to seeing him a little bit more. I thought the USC tape in particular was good for him, but it'll be nice to see him during one-on-ones at the All-Star Game experience at the Shrine Game.
And then a guy that's kind of the opposite profile, Jose Ramirez from Eastern Michigan. He's a little bit squattier. He's 6'2", 33-inch arms as a pass rusher, and actually started his career at Arizona. His first year was 2017. So we're talking about a guy who will be a 24-year-old rookie next year. He's been pretty good when you look at it from an analytics standpoint. A lot of the win rate things are very favorable from his standpoint. But I'm excited to dig deeper into Jose Ramirez's tape. I know you've also done Kytrell Clark, the Louisville corner that was announced for the Shrine Bowl.
Yeah, and with Clark, yeah, the size is working against him a little bit. Yep. He'll be under 5'11". He'll be right around probably 180 pounds. And he's, you know, kind of like Roger McCreary last year with those shorter arms. It'll be similar with Clark. He'll be right around 29 and a quarter inch arms when we get the official measurements at the Shrine and then at the Combine. But he's a twitched up athlete. And, you know, you see that in his ability to sink and redirect. You see the way that you know, he explodes with that speed, and he's uncomfortable in off coverage. He's comfortable man to man because of that athleticism. So from a foot quickness standpoint, and I think also from a mental standpoint, you can see him sniff out route combinations. He's played a lot of football. He's got that veteran presence. I think first and foremost, where he needs to get better is just the physicality, the play strength. That's something where right now, it's just not quite where you want it to be. And you question, you know, what's the ceiling for him in that that area because of his size. But from an athleticism standpoint, from a guy that's seen a lot of football, I think that gets you excited and why he could help your football team.
And then let's go over to the Senior Bowl. We've talked a lot this fall, Dane, about this senior quarterback class. There's just a bunch of names. And one name that we haven't really talked about, and he was one of the first invites now for the Senior Bowl, Tyson Badgen. I'm not even sure if I'm doing the pronunciation right there because I have not done Tyson yet. But from Shepherd University, D2 level, 6'3", just under 220 pounds. What can you tell us about Tyson Badgen?
It's Bajan. So just like agent, yeah, but with the B in front. Okay. Yeah,
that helps.
He's really interesting because he set the Division II record for passing touchdowns. You know, the Shepherds actually they lost in the conference championship game this weekend, but they're I think the 2 or 3 seed in the D2 playoffs starting this weekend. So we'll see what they could do in the D2 playoffs. But they've got a really good chance with a quarterback like this. He can make all the throws. You see the arm talent. The ball just really comes off his hand really nicely. Every inch of the field, you feel like you have to cover because he can hit it all. Nice footwork in the pocket. He delivers with accuracy. That's nice to see. And he's been starting since his freshman year back in 2018. So he's played a lot of football. And so I was intrigued by the tape. And now I'm interested to learn more about him. I've got a piece coming out later this week on Bajan and kind of his journey and some fun things about him. But, you know, Division II, it's obviously a lesser competition than what a lot of guys at FCS and obviously FBS, what they're seeing. And so how does the speed of the game, how is he going to catch up to that at something like the Senior Bowl where he's playing against better competition, he's playing with better receivers. And so it's going to be a lot of fun to watch him in that type of setting.
So I'll go with running back Cameron Peoples here from Appalachian State. And this is a big boy at running back, 6'2", over 220 pounds. He's got 33 and a quarter inch arms. This guy is tall. He is long. He is broad. And he is a freight train down the middle when you talk about his ability to run as a gap scheme runner, get downhill in a hurry. He kind of reminds me of Carlos Williams when Carlos Williams was coming out of Florida State. Dane, I don't know if you remember him from a few years back. Very similar broad frame. And I feel like the same kind of, even like the running gait, like the way that they move, I thought was very similar. Some similarities for Eagles fans that might say, oh, who's he like? I don't remember Carlos Williams. Some similarities like a Bryce Brown. I think a little less broad. Bryce Brown was a little bit more compact, but in terms of running style, I thought they were kind of similar. And Peoples, he's been more of a rotational player, especially these last 2 years, but he is a violent runner, makes people miss. He is that kind of like big, strong power runner. One guy I know you're excited about, Dane, SMU wide receiver Rashee Rice. I think one of the top senior receivers you have in this class.
Yeah, no doubt. He was my top senior over the summer, and I don't think he's done anything to give up that title. You see the body control, you see the hand-eye coordination, you know, the way he can track the football down the field is outstanding. He's not necessarily a burner. Like, he's not a 4.3 guy, but he could be a 4.4 guy. I mean, he has enough speed where he can stack corners, separate downfield. But above all, he's a ball winner. And that's what you love about him. He can locate, he can time his leaps. He does a really great job just going and getting the football. So there are some things where he's not the most sudden in his routes. And so I think that's something I want to see during one-on-one matchups at the Senior Bowl in terms of beating the wide receiver, is just being a little more calculated, detailed, and sudden in his movements. But I'm drawn to guys that are ball winners, and he's definitely that.
Going to the tight end position, Hunter Lepke is a guy I would expect to look pretty good in one-on-ones. We talked about him on the show the last couple of weeks, Dane, so I don't want to dive too deep here, but a versatile kind of move tight end, a little bit undersized for like a pure inline player, but if you're looking for an H-back type, no one catches the ball as well as Lepke. He is just so much fun to study. His versatility will definitely be valuable moving forward into the NFL. Let's now go into another player here along the offensive line. You and I have both studied him. I'm going to talk about him a little bit later in the show, actually, and that's Nick Saldivari from Old Dominion.
Yeah, a player that didn't have many options coming out of high school is kind of a hidden gem. And he comes in and he's just been a consistent player for them. He's played a lot of football. I'm eager to hear you talk about him in a little bit to see, how much you like him, where you think he is. I thought he might have been on the cusp of receiving an invite or not. But he's here, one of the first invites. So that's a really good opportunity for him to go down to Mobile and show what he can do in these one-on-ones.
Four defensive players for us to cover. I'm going to let you pick one from the front and one from the back end. So up front, we've got Nick Hampton, the explosive, juiced-up pass rusher, Sam linebacker for Appalachian State, and Siaki Ika, the nose tackle for Baylor. I'll let you pick one, and I'll take the other.
I got to go with Ika. I mean, this is I don't know that he's necessarily lived up to – he came in, he was top 20 for me in the summer, just overall. I mean, his Ole Miss tape, the bowl game, was unbelievable. I don't think he's necessarily lived up to that, but you still see the talent. It's clear this guy is going to be in the NFL for a long time with that type of ability for, 340 pounds, nimble, disruptive, his grip strength, his violence at contact. He's for a guy that's that big, you see fluid movements. He can bend a little bit. So not only can he sit down and be a traditional nose in terms of taking on doubles and, being able to just erase gaps in the middle of that line of scrimmage, but he can also give you a little bit of pass rush. And that's so valuable in today's game, being able to keep him on the field like that. So, he's technically an underclassman. So I think accepting this is maybe tipping his hand a little bit that he's coming out and, not really a surprise. I think he's going to be an early round player, but he's definitely got a chance to be one of the better nose tackles in this class.
And for me, Nick Hampton from App State, undersized pass rusher, 6'2", south of 230. We'll see what he comes in down in Mobile. But this guy's a freak athlete. He was on the freak list this past year. And I think when you look at his explosiveness off the ball, what really stands out to me, though, because I think with Eagles fans that are listening, they might say, okay, like there are some similarities to Patrick Johnson, who was a 7th-round pick a couple years ago out of Tulane. Kyron Johnson, who was, a 5th-round pick out of Kansas this past year. Kyron Johnson was down in Mobile and did some good things down there. But I think when you look at Nick Hampton, what sets himself apart from some of those other guys is that the way that he sequences rushes really, really stands out to me, because he's got that first step, so he can win with speed. Then he'll also go speed to power. So, all right, he's got the fastball, he's got the changeup, but then he also throws in the curveball, because off the bull rush, he's got those ghost moves where he'll fake like he's going to go inside with a long arm bull rush and then slap and rip his way through the tackle and win the edge that way. And so I love watching pass rushers that have a plan, and I think Nick Hampton has an idea of what he's doing, getting after offensive tackles and attacking the quarterback. The production has been there, the win rates are there, the athletic through the roof. So a lot to be excited about there with Nick Hampton. And then in the secondary, Ja'Corian Bennett and Anthony Johnson, two corners here from the senior class heading to Mobile. Dane, which of those two do you want to hit on?
Yeah, I'm really intrigued with Ja'Corian Bennett out of Maryland. He's, the size is okay. It's not going to blow you away, but I think he's got better length than what you would expect for a guy that's, right around 5'11", 200 pounds. And he's very physical. He knows how to use that length, good ball skills, good athlete, so he can play tight coverage. And so, you know, you see him redirect with different types of routes. You see him, you know, disrupt the timing, the cadence of those routes as well. And so, he's a guy that I'm eager to see in those one-on-one situations against wide receivers. I think he could come out of this week, as a winner because, he's got the talent. I don't know that you always see it consistently on film, but you see the flashes and it gets you excited about, you know, if he just can be a little more consistent, he's got, starter ability. It's just, can he be a little more consistent? And maybe he does that at Mobile. And Mobile kid too, by the way.
Yes, a guy making his homecoming, no question. For me, I'll round it out with Anthony Johnson from Virginia, 6'2", 202 pounds. He's got great length. He's a little bit of an older senior. He'll be a 24-year-old rookie next year. But Virginia, by the way, has a great pedigree with putting longer corners into the NFL. Also, I would be remiss if I did not mention just a terrible, unspeakable tragedy down in Charlottesville in Virginia this past weekend. Three players reportedly killed via gun violence from another former player. Just another example of the issues that just plague our country, and it's just awful. Just reading the details of it, it's just terrible. And obviously, things continue and continue to need to be changed. And Virginia, just the latest example of that. But Anthony Johnson heading to Mobile. It's a weird. I don't even know how to correctly transition off of that, Dane. Just a terrible occurrence down there at UVA. Thoughts with everybody that's affected by that program. But let's now transition to this week in college football. A bunch of really fun games here this weekend, and we'll start on offense. Give out our game balls, Dane. I'll let you take the honors here.
Yeah, I was going to talk about Michael Penix, but you called him first, so I'm eager to hear what you have to say about how he looked against Oregon. I'm going to give my game ball to Tar Heels wide receiver Josh Downs, who just uncoverable against Wake Forest. And really, it's been like that all season. Just the last three games, the Drake May to Downs connection has been unstoppable. 37 catches, 422 yards, 6 touchdowns. That's just the last three games. But again, it's been like that all season. Downs is undersized. There's no way around that. He's probably going to be around 5'9 and a half, 175 pounds at the combine. Yep. That's obviously not ideal. But the speed, the athleticism, especially at the top of his routes, he's so good mixing up his gears and accelerating in different ways. So he's constantly keeping coverage off balance. And I'm really encouraged by the way he's cut down on drops this year. He was double-digit drops last year.
Yep.
This year, only 2 so far. So a guy that's not the biggest target, but he'll consistently pull down throws. This UNC offense is fun. I mean, Drake May is a real deal. I tweeted it out last week, but I really think he'd be quarterback 1 in this draft class if he were eligible. That's discussion for a different time. Next year's quarterback class is going to be a lot of fun. But Downs, I mean, he is draft eligible, and he's making a strong case why he should be a top 40 pick this year.
Well, we talked about Downs going into the year, and this guy is electric. So I'm glad to see that he is continuing, well, now healthy, to put out good tape. I'm excited to dig into his 2022 film. You mentioned Penix, and yeah, he is going to be my pick here with what he did on Saturday night. 26 completions, over 400 yards passing, 2 touchdowns. And I thought Brock Heward, who's a college football analyst for Fox Sports, he is West Coast based, and he kind of put it best. He's like, look, he's showing velocity and accuracy to all areas. All you need to see is that cover 2 whole shot that he put down the left sideline in the midway through that game. And he's been doing this all season long. I just think that the Michael Penix discussion is going to be so fascinating because of the lengthy injury history. He's had what, Dane? Like 4 season-ending injuries going back to his career at Indiana. This is his first year at Washington, and he is crushing it right now. I hope, knock on wood, that he's able to stay healthy. But with what we've seen, I mean, he looks like very much a draftable quarterback. It's the medical is obviously going to be huge.
He's put himself in the discussion to be a mid-round pick. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. The medicals, like you mentioned, that's going to be a hurdle that we'll have to wait and find out. But just based off of the tape, based off of what we're seeing him doing, he's so interesting because he doesn't have picture-perfect mechanics. I mean, even from his hip action to his feet, he'll overstride at times, but then not stride enough. It just doesn't look the way you draw it up. The delivery's a little bit long. But you know, it's he finds a way. The ball still comes out cleanly and gets there in a hurry. And I really like, you know, especially some of those sprint outs on the move. You know, he's a really impressive thrower. And you can tell he's been playing for a long time. That veteran awareness, he knows where the pressure is coming from. He knows the timing, when to get the ball out, how to allow routes to develop. So he's been a fun quarterback to watch. And he is forcing scouts to reevaluate, because I think coming into the year, like over the summer, there was no buzz on Michael Penix from scouts. He was not in the conversation to be drafted, but he is forcing scouts to go back to the tape and, you know, really reevaluate, you know, what he's done. So we'll wait on the medicals, but based off his play, he's long overdue. We talk about him as a prospect. And hey, this is a larger conversation, but the Pac-12 quarterbacks have been fun between, you know, Bo Nix, who we talked about last week, and Michael Penix, and, you know, Caleb Williams, what we'll talk about next year. But, you know, even DTR at UCLA and Arizona's quarterback had a nice week. So Pac-12 quarterbacks have been really fun to watch, especially of late.
I mean, Shrine Bowl and Senior Bowl probably are both taking eight, right? Just there's so many quarterbacks this year to talk about in the senior class. Like, I mean, we just went through right there, three in the Pac-12, and that's not counting all these other names that we've discussed this year. It's a really deep class from that standpoint in the senior ranks. Let's now go over to the defensive side of the football, and I'll start off with NC State linebacker Drake Thomas. He's going to get my game ball. The Wolfpack actually lost to Boston College. Upset loss. Shout out to the guy that we highlighted for my freshman last week, the quarterback Emmett Moorhead, leads him for a second straight win. I believe that's their first winning streak of the year up there for BC. But Drake Thomas, draft eligible linebacker. He's a pure thumper, 6 foot, 230 pounds. And what you're looking for with those guys, like, stuff the stat sheet in as many ways as possible. 6 tackles, 2 sacks, 3 TFLs, 5 QB hurries in a PBU. So Drake Thomas, he gets my game ball this week, despite in a losing effort against BC. But the NC State linebacker, a guy to watch. Who gets your game ball?
All eyes are on Will Anderson and Dallas Turner on that Alabama front, but Byron Young deserves more and more attention. Finished the Ole Miss game with 11 tackles, 2 sacks, a forced fumble, a pass breakup. I mean, he was everywhere, literally. They line him up inside and outside the tackle, then put him close to the A-gap. I mean, he can do so many things on the defensive line. You see the play strength. You see the body control. He's one of my favorite day two defensive lineman in this draft class. I don't think he gets talked about as a day two player, but I mean, I don't know how anybody could watch his tape and say, this guy's not really good. I mean, he is a really fun player who's versatile and has a lot of talent that's going to translate.
I was just going to ask you, like, do you feel like he's day two or early day three? But you answered that on the back end of that. I know you're just hearing you talk about him over the last few weeks. I could tell that you were pretty high on Byron Young. And this week for my one play takeaway, I want to go with one of Young's teammates, Brian Branch, the safety from Alabama. And this is a guy that gets plenty of pub. He's in mock drafts, potential first round pick. And look, he had a big game against Ole Miss. 8 tackles. He had 2 TFLs. But the play that really stands out, how about a game sealing pass breakup? It's 4th and 16. There's a minute left. Alabama's up by 6. So game is purely on the line. And they play cover 2 man on this got to have it play. So you have 2 high safeties and you've got straight man coverage across the knee. Now, Alabama, they're in a dime sub package. And so you've got 6 DBs on the field. That means Branch is playing down in the slot. Well, Ole Miss, they take their best player. They take Jonathan Mingo, the wide receiver that we talked about him last week in the preview show. They slide him in to number 3 and they run him right up the seam. That is exactly where you want your number 1 playmaker to go against 2 man, because there's with 2 high safeties, that middle of the field's open. You are isolating him on that inside defender, which happens to be Brian Branch. And what does Brian Branch do? He makes a diving PBU, crosses the face of Mingo and gets the ball on the ground. Outstanding pass breakup. That is what you want from a high pick at safety. Branch shows off that versatility. That was big time play to close out that game.
I mean, it was just coaching tape, right? I mean, it was exactly how you want a guy like that to play. And I think that's, if you think that, you know, he can cover man-to-man, you know, because, you know, he's kind of playing that star position where it's a safety, but it's a corner, it's a nickel, it's everything. And that's part of what makes Brian Branch a special player. He was number 20 for me on my top 50. I'm super high on him. And I think that play illustrates it. You can leave him in man coverage against Ole Miss's best receiver, and he plays it to a T, perfectly. He knows that the middle of the field's open, so he understands. He flip his hips, return his eyes back to the line of scrimmage, sees the ball or sees the pass coming out, and then makes a diving. And the ball was a little bit out in front, but it doesn't matter. There was no window there because of what Brian Branch did in coverage. So really, really impressive.
Yeah, outstanding play. And literally, as soon as as soon as the play happened, I had to tweet you and say, like, yeah, I'm calling dibs on this one for Monday. All right, who got your one play takeaway this week?
Well, and I'm going to stick with that same game because, I can't help myself with Bryce Young. So late in the third quarter, Bama's down a touchdown. It's third and goal from the five. And Bryce Young, he delivers a touchdown toss that I think it's easy to underappreciate. He escapes the pocket to his right, makes the subtle open field move to buy an extra half second with that defender closing in on him, and then delivers a perfect strike to the streaking receiver in the corner of the end zone. And I think, to be able to move and shake that defender and then the trajectory and placement of the throw, it was all perfect. The timing of everything, the rhythm of everything. I think we've become numb to Young and his magic. But it's just a special, special play. And I think an easy one to underappreciate, but so many quarterbacks are just not capable of that. And so it's easy to overlook it. But Bryce Young, another example of just, his magic and what he does. Again, that's a third and goal, down by a touchdown, late in the game, got to have it play, and he makes it happen.
Yeah, it was just one of those games. I think you tweeted out early on was like, it just felt like one of those games where Bryce Young's going to drag them to the finish line. And that's absolutely the way that game played out. Let's now go to our futures players, our future studs, someone who's ineligible for next spring, but just a name to file away. I will let you kick this one off.
Yeah, and I apologize because I know we talked about him last week, but how do we not highlight LSU linebacker Harold Perkins again and the impact that he made in that Arkansas game, especially in the fourth quarter? His speed off the edge, the ability to dip the corner, it's just insane. And with him wearing number 40 on the jersey, and some of those ghost moves, I mean, how do you not see Von Miller flashes? It's crazy. So it's going to be a lot of fun tracking his development the next few years. Again, true freshman, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been outstanding, especially these last few weeks. He's been on an absolute tear for LSU, who wins the SEC West, just like we all predicted back in the summer. So LSU going to represent the West Division in the SEC title game. I will go from the SEC to the MAC. Let's talk through Ball State running back Carson Steele. And this guy is a load. 6 foot, 215 pounds. He a true sophomore. He was on the freak list this summer. So his athleticism should not be under discussed. But 28 carries for just under 200 yards and three touchdowns versus Toledo this past week. I believe that game was on Tuesday night, so some action there for Carson Steele. Three out of his last four games have gone for 170 plus. The last two have just missed 200. Just to give you an idea of what Carson Steele brings to the table, he's this big, burly kid with long, flowing blonde hair. 155 of those 198 yards against Toledo last week came after contact. Just an absolute bear to bring down when he's running downhill. He forced 13 missed tackles against the Rockets. So I thought, let's give this kid some love. But it's not even just, let's laugh about this. He was on the freak list this summer as a guy that people should know about going into the college football season. So Ball State running back Carson Steele, keep him in mind. We'll be talking about him down the road. Now let's go into the film room. Our film room recap for the week, Dame. One guy you studied on tape over the last week.
Yeah, I think based on tape, I think Kentucky running back Chris Rodriguez has verified why a lot of scouts think he's one of the top five seniors at his position in his draft class. Yep. A big, powerful runner. It can be a negative at times because his pad level is inconsistent. He's a big target for defenders to tackle. But I was really impressed with his patience, his agile footwork at the line of scrimmage. He can hit holes as they widen. The run strength, the size, he really makes it a chore on defenders to finish him to the ground. And I like his potential in pass pro. He needs to do a better job understanding where the pressure, where those are coming from. But he can square and stone blitzers pretty easily. Needs to be a little more precise with his routes and quicker with his hands as a receiver. But he could be a functional screen target. Bottom line, this guy has a skill set to play in the NFL for a long time as a type of complementary back. He's got a lot of things going for him. So, it's interesting comparing him to, say, like another former Kentucky running back like a Benny Snell or, but I think he's be drafted in a similar range, probably early day three, fourth round. And is a guy, again, if he goes to the right spot where he could be that complimentary back, he could play in this league for a long time.
Has the ball security gotten a little bit better from the games you've seen? I watched like two or three games like a couple weeks ago and he didn't put the ball on the ground at all in those games. But I know that was he had like six fumbles a year ago, obviously had the off-field issue as well that cost him the first couple of games of this season. So there are some outlying factors as well with Chris Rodriguez.
Yeah, he had one fumble so far this year. I think it's a South Carolina game. Yep. But down from six to one so far this year. But like you mentioned, that's something important to point out, how he didn't play the first four games. There's a DUI in the summer. There were some eligibility questions. And so, some extra homework that teams need to do on him. But yeah, just based on the talent and the tape, he's a pretty good player.
So I'll wrap us up here with Nick Saltvieri, the offensive tackle we talked about earlier in the show from Old Dominion, going to the Senior Bowl. 6'6", 316 pounds, and he's been mostly a right tackle only. He's got one start at guard, and some do feel that he could move into center. He's got that kind of profile. And I will say, from watching a couple games, he never really looks stressed in reverse. His feet are pretty good, not great. His athleticism, good, not great. Play strength, good, not great. Technique, good, not great. I think overall he's probably better in pass pro than in the run game. He plays a little bit high. He's not like really a huge finisher in the run game. He kind of reminds me a little bit of because that's the thing is, at the end of the day, while I say like good, not great, there's not any like one huge strength with his game. I also didn't feel that there were any huge weaknesses as well, which is perfectly fine. I think, and especially if you're going to be a versatile player that can play tackle, play some guard, even potentially swing inside to center. That's a good valuable player for your offensive line. That's why he actually kind of reminded me a little bit of Jack Driscoll. A lot of the things I wrote down about Jack, I wrote down about Nick Saltvieri. So we'll see if he can go down to the Senior Bowl, have a strong week down there, and see how that bodes for him by the time we get to next April. But that's kind of what I saw from him on tape. I know you said you had some thoughts as well.
Yeah, no, I think that follows. I mean, that tracks with kind of what I saw. I think better in pass pro, definitely. I wish he had a little more position flex, but proven, he's a guy that has he's played a lot of football. I think he plays like that. He plays like he's comfortable out there on an island. I'm eager to see him go in one-on-ones and eager to see if they move him around a little bit. Do they keep him at right tackle? Do they give him some reps at guard or center inside? So this is a big opportunity for him.
Yeah, I know. They've done that. They did it with Driscoll. They did it with Luke Getteke, or they were going to do it with Luke Getteke before he got hurt this past spring. Right. It's a tackle that they're going to play him at guard and center. So we'll see if they do that with Saltvieri. I thought it was notable. I watched the first two games I studied, Virginia Tech and then Coastal Carolina, and I was interested because Virginia Tech, typically their DNs over these last couple of years have been more like the long, loose, explosive, like high side rushers, and then Coastal Carolina, they're more known for like their heavy, like power leverage rushers that are going to come at you relentless. And again, I didn't think that he was like bad in pass pro against either. I thought they held up pretty well. And so while there might not be that A trait, I think this is a well-rounded player moving forward into the NFL. So we've talked through a bunch here. We've got two more guys to hit on, and we're going to do so with Gabriella DiGiovanni. It's time now to go on the clock.
On the clock.
All right, it's time to welcome in Gabriella DiGiovanni for our weekly On the Clock segment. And Ella, I will let you tee up this week's topic.
All right, here we go. The NBA started up recently. So in the spirit of basketball here, every good basketball team has a great sixth man. That's your first guy off the bench. So when we're looking at college football, who is someone who can fit that role for a defense? So kind of an impact player role who could be really good in the pass rush, but not necessarily a starter. That's what I would like you guys to be.
All right. So we're talking up front, defensive lineman. It could be an interior guy or an edge rusher. Dane, I believe you went first last time. So I will do the honors here this week and lead us off. And my pick this week is going to be Georgia Tech's Keon White. Now, I watched him earlier this season playing up against Clemson. It was a game from early on, and he was outstanding, I thought. 6'4", Ella, 283 pounds. So he definitely has that combo body type where he's a little bit light for a full-time interior guy, maybe a little bit heavy than for what you'd want for your traditional edge rusher, but he's got power to push the pocket, and he is a freak show athlete. Explosive first step, outstanding cornering ability, great snap anticipation, his ability to win off the ball, but he has kind of like a limited rush repertoire right now. His pass rush plan, not fully developed. And so to me, he's like the ideal skill set for, all right, let's bring this guy on when it's 3rd and 12, and he can be a battering ram on stunts and twists and also be a really disruptive player either off the edge or in the interior on 3rd down. Now, I'm also not quite sure that he's not a full-time defensive end and not a full-time 3 technique when it's all said and done. But right now, as a rookie, I feel like that can be the kind of the role. And right now, I kind of have him with my interior guys. Now, just for a little bit of background, Ella, what really stands out to me about Keon White, he was a tight end in 2018. He played at Old Dominion, and he moved to the defensive side of the football in 2019. Right off the bat, was extremely disruptive. Second team All-Conference USA in his first year on the defensive side. ODU cancels the season in 2020. They were one of the teams that kind of pulled out the entire year due to COVID. So he transfers out, goes to Georgia Tech, gets hurt in 2021. It was an ankle injury that kind of nagged him through most of the year. So he's back for this year. He's got 4 sacks. Coming into the season, he was on Bruce Feldman's freak list, and they said they had him at like 21 miles an hour this offseason in workouts, which is like kind of freak show wide receiver numbers. But scouts also had him in like the mid 4.7s in the spring in the 40-yard dash. So even just kind of looking at that number, Ella, you say, all right, let's just put it at 4.75. Well, over the last decade, there have been 11 defensive tackles drafted that have hit 4.75 in the 40-yard dash. And a couple of them are the first rounders, you know, the Aaron Donalds, the Ed Olivers, Devontae Wyatt this past spring. But when you look at the other 7-8 guys that were in that list, all of them fit that sixth man prototype. It's like Rasheem Green with the Seattle Seahawks, now with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tano Passanio previously with the Chiefs. Solomon Thomas has kind of carved himself into that role. Margus Hunt, the Eagles. Milton Williams, a 3rd round pick coming out of Louisiana Tech. All of these guys have really kind of carved out a nice niche of being a rotational interior rusher that is dynamite on 3rd down. And I really feel like Keon White profiles perfectly for that role.
That was strong, Dane. That was strong. What do you got?
No, Keon White's a fun player. He, fun fact, he actually was a Domino's delivery guy at ODU. This guy just likes to work flat out. So, but for mine, I'm going with not only one of the better pass rushers this season, but also one of the best comeback stories. UCLA edge rusher Leiatu Latu. He was considered one of the up-and-coming stars at Washington back in 2019. But then he started experiencing this numbness in his neck, and he saw a bunch of specialists, and UW basically said, hey, you can't play. You have to retire. So he misses all of 2020, and then he was basically a student coach in 2021, but he wasn't ready to hang it up. He said, I'm not done playing. So he transfers out, goes to UCLA this past offseason. They clear him, and Latu, he hasn't been a starter for the Bruins, but he has been one of the most productive pass rushers in the Pac-12 and really the entire country this year. He has 8 sacks, same number of sacks as Will Anderson. He's one of 10 players in the country with at least 44 pressures so far this year. Love his quickness. He looks the part. He's got body flexibility. He's got power in his upper body, so he can introduce different force moves with his hands. I think he's been a little inconsistent versus the run, and those medicals are going to be tough to figure out. So because of that, I think given to me on my team as that sub-package rusher, a guy that who can create havoc in pass rush situations, I don't know that I want him taking full-time punishment on that defensive line, but give him to me in pass rush situations, and Leiatu Latu is definitely a name that, you know, needs to be on the radar, a really interesting player.
Dane, with Latu, Dane, do you feel like he's like a pure edge? Do you feel like he's got, I haven't done him yet at all. Do you feel like he's a guy that moves around a little bit, or do you think he's a pure like sub-package edge guy?
No, I think, yeah, a pure edge guy, I think. I mean, he's a guy that maybe you can move him inside. I don't think he, especially when those pass rush situations, because he wins with his hands. He can win in different ways. He's not strictly just speed, but he does have that quickness as well, so he can win off the edge. So I do think it gives you a little bit of that, but yeah, I want him more on the edge than inside.
All right, guys. As we know, my go-to move is always picking the person who debates last. Last week, I think this is correct, I picked Dane, right? Who went
correct.
First?
You broke the trend last week for the first time this season.
And I'm going to continue to break it. Wow. I'm going with Fran. man. I'm sending everybody for a loop. Okay. I was too predictable. I'm a new woman. I had to change it up, you know?
Well, listen, you made the bye week adjustment and look, this week it paid off. Last week, I don't know if you were just kind of dusting the cobwebs off, but I think that this week you made the right move. Look, now I've pulled within one of Dana. We'll see if I could tie it up next week.
See, what worked for Fran is that he gave very good comparisons to other players in the NFL who serve that six-man role very well. And that kind of sent it over the edge, I will say.
It also helped that he picked a guy that is going to be a top 100 pick and going to be a starter in the NFL for a long time. But, you know, that's...
Look, if there's one thing we know about Dane, is that he's going to mail it in if he thinks he's got it in the bag. And clearly, Dane thought he had it in the bag this week, and he mailed it in. That's okay. But guys,
who's leading right now? I still have a one-game lead, right?
Well, guys, always fun. We will talk to you both next week right here on the Journey of the Draft podcast, presented by LifeBrand.
What makes those great players great? It's time to roll up our sleeves and go under the hood.
All right, well, joining us here for the first time on the Journey of the Draft podcast for this week's Under the Hood segment, Brentley Weissman. You can follow his work on Twitter at Brentley12. He does great work over with the Draft Network. Brentley, welcome to the show, man.
Friend, appreciate you having me on. Been a longtime listener, so it's exciting to finally jump on the pod.
No, I really appreciate it. And just for our listeners that have not heard your work yet, just give us some background. I know you worked in the NFL, you've worked at college, so working at both levels, obviously you bring a level of expertise that can be really appreciated by people that are interested in the draft and college football and the NFL. So give us a little bit of your backstory, and we'll get into talking some pass rushers here.
Yeah, for sure. So I went to school at University of Oregon, obviously big diehard Ducks fan. Got my start in football, working under Chip and Mark Helfrich as a recruiting intern as an undergrad, and really kind of parlayed that opportunity to a few full-time jobs in the NFL and one at UCLA in college. But, you know, with the league, I was scouting for the Chargers back from 17 to 19, right when they moved to LA. So that was a fun experience. And then also with the Raiders and Patriots in various roles, ranging from operations to scouting intern and things like that. So, you know, been around the block a little bit and have a really cool kind of experiences and met a lot of good people. And it's been great kind of being in football since, gosh, 2013, which is time is flying, you know?
Yeah, as it typically does, man. It's great. When I reflect back on like, oh yeah, my first season working full time in football was like 2006, and then we bring interns in every year, and like, oh yeah, like, you know, I was born in 2001, and I'm like, oh my god, like you were a baby when I was just starting in football. It's crazy to have those conversations. Time does fly. But with that in mind, I want you to kind of parlay your expertise. Yes. Oregon, look, they've done a great job of projecting pass rushers from college to the NFL. The teams that you mentioned that you worked with in the league, they've done a good job of evaluating pass rushers. So interested to kind of get your thoughts here. I guess we'll start with this. You're non-negotiable. You cannot be a great pass rusher, a great edge rusher without this one trait.
So for me, it's the ability to bend and flatten when you're at the top of your arc to the quarterback. You know, when I was at the Chargers, I was blessed to be around two of the best pass rushers during their careers, which are still going on, is Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. And while they won in different ways, Joey more of the hand technician, more of the kind of speed to power, while Melvin was more of the explosiveness, kind of speed off the edge, they both had an ability to flatten to the quarterback once they get to the top of their rush, meaning they have loose ankles, they have loose hips, they're flexible athletes, they're not stiff, they're not tight. So when they get to the top of the rush, rather than the quarterback stepping up in the pocket, they can still turn and turn that sharp corner to get home. I think a lot of the time where the conversation goes between can a player finish or can they just, you know, be disruptive and generate pressure, it's the players who can really flatten at the top of the arc that can get the sacks, that can get the strip sacks, that can get to the quarterback. And that's the name of the game. You know, it's the difference between, hey, Bosa getting a sack rather than, you know, the next player just getting a pressure and forcing the ball out quickly, but he still gets completed, right? You got to be able to finish at the quarterback. And I think the true difference makers at the position all share that trait. They can bend and they can finish.
You know, and it's important too that we clarify. We always try and do this in this segment, is that the question that I ask is, it's tough to be a great player without this trade. Yeah. I agree with you that, and that's why I'm interested that you brought that up. Is that, like, you can be a starting pass rusher for a team, you could be a good rusher and not have that bend. You have that ankle stiffness, that inability to turn the corner, but you can't be a great one without that ability. I think when you look at the great ones, they all have that ability. Now, we can overvalue that and say, hey, you're missing 100%. A, B, C, D, E, and you have bend, but and then not be a full-time player. But it's tough to be that great one without having that flexibility.
1,000%. That's exactly how I see it. You know, I'm sure, you know, there's a threshold of size, length, explosiveness, power, right? And you can be a really good player while missing bend or being a little stiff if you have enough in those other categories. But for that elite player, for that Pro Bowl, All-Pro type of impact kind of guy, I think they all share an ability that they can bend, they have loose hips, they have loose ankles, and they can get home at the top of the rush.
All right, so now with that in mind, let's just talk about what are the three traits that you look at to say, okay, this guy can be an NFL starter. So not necessarily an elite player, but three traits, and I'll let you buzz through the three, and then maybe I'll hit you on a follow-up at the end. But the three traits that stand out most to you, aside from bend, to be a starter off the edge.
Yeah, for me, it's a first-step quickness, explosiveness off the snap, being able to win with speed, you know, really kind of put pressure and stress on the opposing tackle out of the gate, out of the snap. That's, for me, it's a non-negotiable. I definitely think that's definitely a piece for successful edge rushers. The next, length. Length, it can be a difference between a completed touchdown pass to a sack. You know, I want my edge rushers to have long arms. I want them to be tall. It matters, you know, because not only does it matter as a pass rusher, it matters when you're setting the edge. Being able to a long arm of the tackle, have a firm base, have the edge in the running game, I think is very, very critical as an edge defender. And lastly, motor. You know, motor to me is highly important for an edge defender. There's so many times I'm thinking about Joey, or I'm thinking about Max Crosby, who a lot of their production comes late in the down.
TJ Watt.
Because they, exactly, 100% TJ Watt. Simply because they never give up. They are always working to the football. Like, that to me is I need my edge rusher to play with his hair on fire, never quit, play through the whistle, because you never know. And a lot of that production comes from just straight up having effort and motor. So those are really the three things that I personally value above all else outside of the ability to bend in my pass rushers.
You could tell that you worked under Chip Kelly with the way that you talk about length. We know that Chip values those long levers across a number of positions. So I was not shocked that was one of the traits you listed. I think to me, when you look at that length as well, it's, you talked about that finishing ability and the ability between differentiating between what could be a touchdown pass or a sack, but then also like early in the down, that ability to win early on against the blocker and be able to defeat. And this is actually a thing I took from Chip Kelly as well from when he was here in Philadelphia in conversations with him, was defensive line, it's man off man, and with offensive line, it's man on man. And so again, kind of getting into that length, it was, all right, well, if you're a defensive lineman with length, you can keep that offensive lineman away, so man off man. And that was such a valuable trait for those guys, not just off the edge, but in the interior as well.
It's important, because you never want the tackles to get in your chest. You want to be able to keep your chest clear, and those long arms help. It helps them combat when the tackles try to get up on you. You can move away and use your length to keep that distance, keep a separation while working upfield on your rush. So to me, think about the guys that came out of Oregon. I mean, they're all long. It's all, the Eric Armsteads, the Deion Jordans, the DeForest Buckner, even the Kayvon Thibodeaus of the world. I mean, they're all 6'5 plus, if not taller, and with 35 inch arms. I mean, there's definitely a mold. That's kind of what I've been around. And I just think it's a difference. You know, I mean, we saw Trayvon Walker go from kind of big underrated, not many people know who he was, to holy crap, this guy's 35 and a half inch arms, 6'5", bolted to the number one overall pick in a blink of an eye. And so I definitely think length is a trait that NFL teams, NFL decision makers will always covet in pass rushers.
Yeah, the Eagles will see one of those players in DeForest Buckner this week against the Colts. When you look and reflect back on your early days as an evaluator, you know, when you first got in into the business and working at Oregon, how have your evaluations of edge rushers changed? And then, you know, obviously with all the different stops along the way.
You know, it's a great question. I think I was really stuck in my ways and kind of, I wanted a certain mold in my pass rusher. I wanted that long, strong ability to also convert speed to power and bull rush and things like that. But what I've learned really over the past 3 years, kind of being in the media, is it's not important how they win. It's important if they win. Meaning, I loved Nick Bonito last year at Oklahoma. I was by far in the way. I was in on Nick Bonito. And for a guy who values size and length, Nick Bonito's opposite of that. Yeah. You know, I think he was 6'4", 6'3", 240 pounds, if that. His ability to bend, his lateral agility to make a bunch of tackles miss with their hands and be able to kind of continue to rush that way, his motor was sensational. So he didn't have to win with length. He didn't have to win with power. He won with quickness, agility, flexibility. And but the matter of fact is, he won consistently. He was always getting to the quarterback. And so for me, it's like, okay, while I value certain traits in pass rushers, if they're winning, they're winning. And what I'm a firm believer in this, and I know I'm not making this up, like, you know, people say all the time, I believe sack production from college to the NFL, it travels, it translates. Yep. Getting sacks in college, likely you can probably get sacks in the NFL. Like, I'm a firm believer in that. And so now, whenever I look at pass rushers, okay, sure, like, I would love them to be 6'6", 35-inch arms, can bend. Like, there's a prototype, sure. I would never disqualify an undersized guy if they're consistently getting home. You know, I mean, like, Nick Bonito for me is the perfect example. Like, 6'3", 240 pounds with 33-inch arms, 32-inch arms. That's not going to be the needle for a lot of people, but he doesn't have to win with those measures, with those skill sets, with length and power. He can win with literally quickness, the ability to bend. Tackles couldn't touch him. So it's important to understand, hey, as long as this player is winning, let's evaluate why he wins and what he wins with, rather than kill him for what he's not living up to in terms of the actual prototypes for the position.
I love that. I always round this segment out by asking the question, like, just asking about the landscape of the value at this position around the NFL. We know that pass rusher, you know, if you're a prime A pass rusher, that's extremely valuable, one of the most two or three important assets that a team can have. So I think I almost like put that aside and talk about a guy like Bonito, because, you know, Bonito, there were people that loved him and thought, like, this guy can be, you know, exactly what you were just saying. But then the detractors would say, oh, well, he's probably more of a rotational piece. I don't, with at that size, can he play every down? So here's what I want to ask you. The value, when you look at today's league and it being a sub-package league and teams want to be able to rotate up front, and you get into third down and you see all of those exotic looks up front in the NFL, what is the value of that kind of player? Let's say Nick Bonito, that's all he becomes. Hey, he's going to be that first guy off the bench. It's second and 15. It's third and 8. And now you're trying to get after the quarterback. What is the value of that guy from a draft standpoint? Is that worth a top 40 pick? Or are you saying, you know what, if he's not going to be an every down guy for us, even if he does come through in high leverage situations, I have to wait just a little bit before I invest in that asset?
I think it's it varies kind of on a scale, right? I mean, if Nick Bonito is going to be a 9+ sack guy, but he's literally unplayable on rundowns, you know, you have to weigh that. There's a balance. I personally, yeah, I would drop that guy in the top 40. Because it allows you just to create all sorts of mismatches on the line. You know, thinking about when I was with the Chargers, you know, one of the things we wanted to do was have Joey rush inside. And, you know, we'd have Melvin left of Joey. We'd have Uchenna Nwosu on right of Joey, and Joey's rushing as a three tech. And there's not a single guard that can single block Joey Bosa. It's impossible. He's too long and quick. And so getting those playmakers that can play in sub can also uplift your starters because it puts them in advantageous situations. Yeah. But, you know, it's the thing about it is, you know, in today's game, we're played dang near almost 65, 70% in sub regardless. You know, this is the passing league. And, you know, maybe that starts to transition. I'm a firm believer eventually teams are going to start zigging while everyone is zagging, and we're going to get more power run principles. And then players like Nick Bonito, who I actually thought, by the way, was a better run defender than give it credit for, but players like that will become a little less valuable. But I think as of today, where the landscape is in the NFL in terms of offensive play calling, players like Bonito, who are pass rush specialists, I firmly believe they're worthy of top 40 picks.
And that's the thing. When I look at a guy like Bonito, I almost look at it from the way that, you know, what are we hearing around the NFL now? Everyone wants to play the two high shell schemes, and they want to be able to load the box. We're going to see five man fronts, the penny personnel, where it's, hey, five man line with one linebacker, and you've got five DBs on the field, and that's the way that teams want to live. Well, in that, if that's the case, some of those guys like a Bonito, like a Hassan Reddick, they can live and be effective run players working against tight ends and a tackle with a runway, as opposed to, hey, this guy's going to be an every down defensive end and play with his hand in the dirt and be a snug five technique or a tight seven technique and have to play in a phone booth. I think that by asking those guys to just slightly change that role, it does give them a little bit more leeway in terms of their ability to be a three down player.
Look at Baron Browning. I mean, look at Baron Browning. Sure. That's the perfect example. I mean, I think he's what, 245 pounds, 50 pounds. And he's an undersized guy. He was an off ball backer out of state. And similar to Parsons with the Cowboys, they're putting his hand on the dirt, and he's a terror off the edge, you know, and because he's so quick, has the ability to bend, means it's relentless. So, you know, I think the Broncos have themselves two really, really quality pass rushers, which allowed them to obviously trade Bradley Chubb away for a first-round pick. So, you know, I think you're exactly right there.
Well, Brentley, this has been awesome. Again, make sure everybody goes follow his work at the Draft Network. You can follow Brentley on Twitter at Brentley12. Brentley, thanks so much again for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by LifeBrand. We'll have you on again soon to talk through some of these prospects around the college landscape.
No, Fran, sounds good. It's going to be a talented edge group this upcoming draft, so excited for that.
No doubt.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, time to wrap the show up with our scouting report. Good stuff there from Brentley Weissman. And to continue our talk about defensive line, we're going to bring in Ben Fennell to talk through our notes on Josh Sweat when he was coming into the NFL in the 2018 draft, part of what was just an outstanding draft class for the Eagles that year. Dallas Goedert, Avante Maddox, Josh Sweat, Jordan Mailata, just an outstanding group, a small sample size. It was a low number of picks, but the Eagles hit a large majority of those players, a bunch of second contracts, and Sweat, one of those guys, Ben. And let's just kind of reflect on the profile of Josh Sweat coming out of Florida State and some of the things that stood out to us on film.
Yeah, just a shade under 6'5", 250, really long, strong player. It was exceptional at firing into the offensive lineman. You saw the dip and flexibility around the edge, high side, set some violent edges in the run game, particularly against tight ends, all sorts of swipe moves. Did a really good job in using his length as well. I thought he kept himself clean particularly well, kept offensive linemen off his chest. You saw some of the range and radius with those long limbs and wrangling running back. Was heavy, violent hands as well. But his play was just so inconsistent. I thought his motor was inconsistent. I thought his snap timing was up and down. I thought he struggled a little bit against power. Sometimes those tall, long limb guys are a little bit thin in the legs, thin in the lower half, and just holding up against power. And just a little bit raw on his pass rush plans. I think he was such a naturally gifted athlete. But the major, you know, underlined, in red, bold, highlighted in his report is the injuries. He was obviously a major medical concern with a dislocated kneecap ACL at a high school, and then the torn meniscus in his left knee, I think a year or two into his career at Florida State. So not going to pretend to be a doctor, not going to pretend to say, I looked at his x-rays and said, everything's good, let's draft him in the fourth round. That's the limitations of the tape, you know. So if you're on the field, we'll evaluate it. Of all the metrics, you know, obviously those 34 5/8 inch arms, over 84-inch wingspan, really like the length, 30.
4.53 in the 40.
Yeah, really impressive 40 as well. So the explosiveness in a linear sense, almost a 40-inch vertical, 39.5, 10.4 broad.
1.55 in the 10-yard split.
So you saw the lower half explosiveness, and you saw the length, and you saw the flashes of ability, but the inconsistent tape and the medicals is why he was really caught anywhere from a second-round to a seventh rounder for all intents.
Yeah, there are a lot of teams in the NFL that will look at a player's pedigree and say, like, you know, it's almost, it becomes a risk management discussion, right? Where you're saying, okay, all the things you just said, with the, from a height, weight, speed standpoint, this was the number one player coming out of high school, and his kind of build is like, this guy could be a blue chip kind of talent. And when you get to certain areas of the draft, that's when you start to see things with the, from a medical report standpoint. I wouldn't say it's rare, but there aren't often a lot of guys where it's like, yeah, he's completely off the board. It's more of a, all right, at what point are we willing to accept that this risk is palpable for us? And so I think when you look at Josh Sweat, yeah, like the knee injury history was pretty significant. And so that's why he was not a first round pick or a top 50 pick or a top 60 pick when it was all said and done. He ends up going early in the fourth round. And I think you see a lot of those traits have showed up here in Philly. Now, it's been over a couple of schemes here, Ben. So we've seen Josh Sweat used in a number of different roles. When you look at his traits, because that was the big thing I remember as well, was people trying to say, oh, well, it's all traits and the production wasn't there at Florida State. But then a lot of people would point to the fact, oh, well, you know what? He wasn't always used to the best of his ability. He was often used in those snug alignments as a five technique, and he was better off with a runway. And we've seen that kind of bear out in the NFL as well.
Yeah, and I don't know if we emphasize enough, number one player at a high school.
Yeah.
Yep. And there's a huge scouting contingency and philosophy about going back to high school grades, going back to 4 and 5 stars, why they were considered to be high-level prospects out of high school, regardless of what they did on Saturday.
No, honestly, it's the same thing with pro scouting with guys who were first-round picks.
No question. Yep. Yep. And there's a reason why they were 4 or 5 star. Typically, some high-level production, some sort of body type, some sort of traits. And that's what Josh Sweat had, despite the injuries out of high school as well. So I think the Florida State tape left some to be a little bit, you know, left to be desired. But you saw the traits, the ability, the upside, the potential. If the medicals were there, he's somebody worth drafting. And I actually think it was a perfect storm of edge rushers. I think fourth round was incredibly generous. Mm. I thought he was going to be a late day 3 pick. But when you're starting to look at the landscape, which you immediately got into the questionable gray area edge rushers.
That was a weak group.
Because, you know, Bradley Chubb went early, but not, you know, the prototypical high side edge, you know, quarterback hunter. Harold Landry fell to the second because of an injury. Arden Keyes waited all over the place. Marcus Davenport, explosive, exciting. At UTSA, you had no idea where he was going to go. Saints traded up, actually spent 2 first-round picks on him. Kamoko Touré, and you start getting into those guys after.
I'm just like looking at the bottom of my list.
Sam Hubbard, yeah. Converted lacrosse player, all tense.
Denny, turned, you know, just a solid role player with the Steelers, but you know, Agbonia Okoronkwo has turned into a nice player as a day 3 guy out of Oklahoma.
Also undersized, though. It wasn't for everybody.
Yeah, like, but like Kylie Fitz at Utah, Javon Roland Jones. Really,
you quickly got into those guys after the first 5 or 6 went off the board.
Xavier Thigpen and Deshaun Downey from UMass.
So, Fran, you're sitting there in day 3 like the Eagles were, saying, hey, you know, let's bolster our defensive linemen and our edge room. Where are we going? He quickly kind of bolstered up boards. So I think it was a great kind of circumstance of class for him as well to say, yeah, the medicals are there, the inconsistent tape is there, but we got to fill out our edge room. It's the fourth round, and there isn't a whole lot after him. So I thought it was kind of a perfect storm for him to go where he did. And using here in Philadelphia, you saw him in some even fronts, 4-3. You saw him in some odd fronts, sliding inside. But his development, you see the length, you see the violent hands, you see the flexibility. Now you're starting to work in pass rush plans, more refined hands, counter moves. Now you're seeing the pro come into himself. When you have NFL coaching through a couple different defensive line coaches here in Philadelphia, some really good ones, some really good schemes as well, going from a Jim Schwartz to a Jonathan Gannon. It's really impressive to see a guy use all those tools, those traits, those abilities with a little sprinkle of some NFL coaching. And you get Josh Sweat in his 4th or 5th year looking like a, you know, borderline Pro Bowler.
I'd say I'm just like still wild looking at this list. It's a great point.
When I went looked through the edge group, Fran, I said to myself, man, that's a perfect storm for him.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and he almost probably could have gone on day 2 because of that.
That was a brutal group.
Yeah.
But I, to your point too about the development, I remember we did a segment, it was the COVID year of 2020, of Josh Sweat's development. And it was like, all right, year 1, he was like, he was still a little bit banged up and was like a back end roster player, like, you know, rotated in and out, but was in and out of the lineup. Year 2, it was more of a role player, like first guy off the bench. He was working with the second team group. And then year 3 was where he really jumped off. And you saw even his rush plans kind of develop over the course of that time where, all right, he's still kind of figuring it out year 1. Year 2, that long arm bull rush really showed up and he was really disruptive with his power. And then year 3, that's where you started to see the long arm, the stab slap rips and the ghost moves. and those things. And now that's when he kind of leans on, is that ability to mess with offensive tackles. Just, you know, it's exactly what we talked about earlier in the show with Nick Hampton. That was what you saw with Josh Sweat as he got into the NFL.
And I really, really credit him, because some of the veteran presence and young players on this team were much different. I mean, he's not going to learn a lot from Brandon Graham. Outside of hustle right, and things like that, and hand placement, much different body types. You know, Derek Barnett was a snap jumper, high side rusher. You know, that's how he won at Tennessee, and that's how he wanted to win here in Philadelphia. Josh Sweat was a little bit different. Josh Sweat has some Miles Garrett-like length and ability and pass rush plan. Now, Garrett's a freak show. There's only so many of those on the planet. But he really kind of, I think, had to look around the league and say, let me find some guys that are like me. Whether that was him, coaching, I don't have all the facts to connect those dots, but just looking at the room he walked into, he didn't have a whole lot of clones in that room,
you know,
to say.
You know who he came in with? There was a rookie with him that year, because he was also on this list I was just looking at? Joe Osman, who was like the complete opposite.
Perfect example, yep. They were probably on the rookie bus together, saying, oh, I'm here with the fullback. Like, oh, no, I'm an edge rusher, buddy. I had 20 sacks last year, you know, in college football. But, yeah, it's just a funny thing. You know, he probably had to work very hard in finding some that maybe mimicked his body type a little bit closer.
Is there a specific way, you know, that when you look at his usage that, because again, in different schemes, we've seen different things, but I think with his body type, it's been interesting, because you can use him up and down the line, but his best football certainly does come when he's lined up with a runway out wide.
Yeah, he's gotten, you know, stronger in the lower half, but he's gotten much more technically sound with his hands. He's a strong run defender, and he still has the length, the violence, the flexibility in his pass rush, but with a plan.
Yep.
So now everything is just a little bit more refined. He is a three-down player, and when you're a three-down defensive end, you could probably make it work in any scheme. And I think that's what we've seen from the transition from, you know, Schwartz to Gannon.
Yeah, a lot of credit to him for, you know, eating some of those reps last year after Brandon Graham got hurt.
Sure,
to slide into five technique and some of those odd fronts. He hasn't had to do that as much this year because of the depth on the interior for the Eagles. Now, lastly, is there a player or two that reminds you of Josh Sweat, or some similarities there in the profile that are coming out in this class?
Now, 6'5", 250 edge rusher. These are all over college football, especially running 4.5s now.
Right.
They're all over the place. So there's some that, you know, really looked apart, whether it's KJ Henry at Clemson or, you know, the Yabi Oki kid from Michigan. That's UT Martin, Alabama, 5-star. You know, he kind of looks the part. But let's get into a little bit deeper here. Will McDonald, Iowa State. Same type of length, explosiveness, just very raw in my opinion.
Yes.
I think it's similar trajectory in his football refinement. Now, Will McDonald doesn't have the medicals like he does, just raw being a late bloomer into football.
Yep.
Now, somebody with the same body type with some medical concerns, J.J. Weaver at Kentucky, 6'5", 245, really long, really strong, active, flexible. Torn ACL in 2020. You know, his knee has not looked the same kind of since then. So the medicals are going to be big for J.J. Weaver. Will McDonald, a little bit raw with his technique and football ability. Weaver, the medicals. But these 6'5", 255 edge rushers, they're all over Saturdays. You know, so you can find a lot of body types that are similar. Now let's just connect some dots with, you know, the path, the trajectory, their background, their length, and how they play.
Yeah, I think that another name that really kind of stood out to me as well was Zach Harrison from Ohio State.
Perfect one.
A guy that, you know, when you look at it from a big body standpoint, he was another former 5-star recruit. Injuries haven't really been the issue. It's been more like just inconsistencies with Harrison. But at the end of the day, when you're 6'6", you've got 35¾-inch arms, you're just south of 270. Like, there aren't a lot of guys that are built like that and then reportedly break 4.5 in the 40. Like, there just aren't
no
a lot
question.
Of guys that look
so
like
the
that.
Traits so. There, the body type, the length, and the similar conversation of you just want a little bit more out of them, you know? So you saw the flashes. You just want to be a little more consistent. A lot of times that consistency comes at the next level.
Yep. And when you start talking about early day three, then you're saying you're not just having like the ceiling discussions, but also like the floor. It's like, all right, well, at worst, like even if Harrison doesn't hit his ceiling or if Josh Sweat doesn't hit his ceiling in the fourth round, all right, well, if he busts out of the league, okay, well, it was a fourth-round pick. If he's backup, like, that's still, you would say, like, that's a good pick. Oh, that's a good use of a fourth-round pick. And so when you look at Harrison as a big-body DN, you say, all right, well, that's a more palpable risk at that point.
And that's what you do on day three. You take calculated risks with players with high side and upside traits and upside ability, upside development. Remember a year before that or 2 years before that, who they take in the sixth, seventh round? Alex McAllister out of Florida. Guy with a lot of flexibility, a lot of length. You saw the flash ability at Florida. That's a guy you take a flyer on. hang on the practice squad, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, called up, doesn't work out, you move on. That's what day three is all about. Find some guys with potential, some traits, some upside, and then you fall into some Josh Sweats.
Like Josh Sweat, Harrison would be a 21-year-old rookie as well.
So yep, the age factor. Kind
of
yep.
The age factor. There's a lot of things that obviously can go into that. So Josh Sweat, a really fun profile to discuss here when you're talking about from an NFL draft standpoint, Ben. Good stuff there. We'll talk to you later this week as we get ready for what is now going to be week 12 in college football. A lot of important action here coming in the coming weeks. We'll be breaking it all down here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by LifeBrand.